My guest, Frank King, says, "You can make a difference. You can save a life. And I can show you how." Frank became a public speaker on suicide prevention in 2014. He was a writer for The Tonight Show for 20 years, and he holds the record for the longest non-stop comedy club road trip ever. He's already done a dozen, that's 12 TEDx. He has a new one coming out in November this year. And he's been a fantastic TEDx trainer since 2016. I mean, seriously, with a dozen TEDx under his belt, what better trainer could there be? He's worked with so many big names, from Jerry Seinfeld, Jeff Foxworthy, to Adam Sandler, Ellen DeGeneres, and Dr. Kim Jong. I am so excited to bring you my guest today.
Suicide Zen Forgiveness, the pod that shares the stories of those affected by suicide. Lost a loved one? Attempted it yourself? Come listen in with your host, Elaine Lindsay. Please note, the Suicide Zen Forgiveness podcast is for education only. Some of this subject matter could be triggering. For those of you that are either grieving or having mental health problems, please call your local suicide hotline or mental health office if you need immediate help. And now, here's your host, Elaine Lindsay.
Hi there. It's so good to be back. I'm excited to bring you a guest that has been on before. And I have to tell you that I was lucky enough to get to meet Frank King in person just this year. And I'll tell you, he's even funnier in person than he can be even on this type of podcast. So I'm just going to stop babbling away and bring Frank up to the stage. Yeah. Hi there.
Quit with the babbling. No more babbling.
Gee, I think you said that to me in Florida too.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you back. We last saw you in 2021, I think towards the fall, if I'm not mistaken. My memory's not getting better as I age. I don't know how gracefully I'm doing that.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think, fall, yeah.
Fall 21?
Yeah, I'm. The more I think about it, I think maybe September was the first time we spoke. And before we go too far in, I just wanted to say, I don't know if I got a chance to tell you this when we were in Florida, but I know we talked about suicidal ideation, and you say, which to me was both of those words were very new to me when we spoke. And at that time, I had only been dipping my toe in the water of talking about my own suicidal thoughts.
Oh. And
you gave me the terminology to understand what I had gone through as a kid, because I didn't start this podcast because of me. I started because I lost my friend, Andrea, when I was 16. Mm-hmm. But in progressing since you were on, I came to understand that's why my life went to hell in a handbasket when Andrea died, because I didn't realize I was also trying to process all the internal crap. As a kid, if I burnt my breakfast or somebody died, one of the options on the table was, okay, exit stage left.
Yeah, always on the menu.
Yeah, and did not know. So thank you very much for that.
Yep.
It seems like an odd thing to be thanking someone for, but it has made a big difference in me putting all the puzzle pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
So let's delve into
what's happened since 2021 for you? Since we first spoke on here, we've come out the other end of the pandemic. Yep. And we have a different world today.
Yes. And by the way, one of the reasons I don't kill myself is that almost every time I've spoken and told a story about chronic suicidal ideation, car broke down, three thoughts, get it fixed, buy a new one, kill myself, there's been at least one person in the audience, sometimes more, who have chronic suicidal ideation. They have no idea it has a name. They think they're just some kind of freak, completely alone. Happened last month. Young woman came up crying, couldn't speak. And I said, you've got chronic suicidal ideation. She nodded. I said, you had no idea it had a name. Nod. Do you have a therapist back home? Nod. Okay, when you get home, set an appointment, see the therapist. For God's sakes, tell him you learned all this on Google. Don't tell him you learned it from a comedian. And she sent me an email a week later, said, I think I was at that conference in large part simply to meet you. You've changed my life, and I can't say that about a lot of people. So at some point I realized I'm like George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. I've been shown what these people's lives might be like if I weren't there simply to reassure them. And if I kill myself, in theory, I could take a lot of those people with me.
That's, oh my God, that is so true. And yeah, that part of telling you that was definitely a thank you. I guess I'm a little different because I lost Andrea at 16. Mm-hmm. Andrea became this little voice that fought with the other voices and said, yeah, you know what it feels like to be left behind. Are you really going to do that?
Oh, okay.
And I have admitted in the past year or so that there were some very close calls, charcoal in the stomach and the whole nine yards.
Oh, boy.
But something that you might relate to, it, I don't think you're as old as me, but close.
67.
Okay. I'm 68.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, I'll be 69 this year. But for me, as a child, I was 11 when I started volunteering at an asylum, a very, very large asylum for the mentally challenged. At the time, it wasn't even that politely said. But I went every Sunday. And when I was 15, I was allowed by the government to work for the summer and get paid. I got paid $400 for living on site from the end of June till September. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for 2 years, like summers. But why I'm telling you this is there was a song when I was about 11 or 12 called They're Coming to Take You Away, Ha Hee Hee, to the Funny Farm. Do you remember that?
They're coming to take you away. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Now, in that day and age, you didn't tell people that you had weird thoughts. You certainly didn't tell people you thought of killing yourself. And you for sure, because they would take you away. And a young boy I went to school with, he ended up in there the second week I was working.
Oh.
When I was 15, and I ran up to him in the yard because I thought, oh, cool, somebody else got a special thing. And I said, Michelle, I didn't know you were going to work here. He said, what are you talking about? I don't work here. I live here.
I live here. Yes.
And for me, that was the lid shutting on anything odd in my life. I would tell no one anything. There was nothing I would say to anyone. And that went on till 2013. Because of all those pieces. So you understand from that time how closed mouth everybody was.
And for good reason, oftentimes.
Yeah.
Because many states, if you admit you're having thoughts of suicide to a professional, a mental health professional, they are duty bound by law, drag you in front of a judge and see if they can't arrange for a 3-day all expenses paid visit to a lovely gated community. And so I think that's part of the problem is if we didn't just knee jerk, I'm having thoughts of suicide. Oh, let's go see the judge. Then maybe more people would come forward and talk about it out loud.
And thank you for doing it and doing it in such a way that people can accept it more easily because you're doing it through laughter.
Call it comic relief for a reason.
Absolutely. And laughter really is the best medicine. There's no two ways about it. We have a lot of those old adages for a reason.
Oh, yes. Yes. And it's not for your audience. It's not jokes about suicide. It's funny personal anecdotes. I was at a speaker's function in Vegas the week before last. And there was a gentleman there. We chatted and he sent me a text. Let's do coffee or dinner. Pick your poison. And he wrote, that may have been a bad choice of words with you.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's what's funny. It's things people say and they don't realize until after they've said it. Oh my God.
And it's true, because the minute they used to make jokes about Jimmy Durante's nose and what have you, because once you hit on that topic, it's really hard for people not to think, what is it? Don't think about a pink elephant.
Yeah.
It's that thing. That's what happens to people. And with suicide, I'm sure it's the same thing. And you're giving people permission.
Yes.
Not just to talk about it, but to be real.
Yes, without recrimination. I always say that 30, 45 minutes after my keynote. I say, look, we're going to do some general Q&A. We're going to do some general Q&A. And then you may have a question you want to ask, story you want to share, you don't want to share with everybody. Like, hey, Frank, I'm crazy. Can you help me? And I'll hang around 30, 45 minutes. And sometimes it's two people. Sometimes it's 10. And most of the conversations start this way. I've never told anybody this. I get that a lot. I had a young man come up to me on a construction site. I spoke on site. There's half a dozen guys, mostly guys in the audience lined up. And he was the last one, nice young black fellow, mid-20s, I'm guessing. And he's crying again. He's crying. Can't speak. So I waited. And when he gathered himself, I said, what's up? Because I haven't slept in a couple of nights. I work on the fifth floor of this building. I think about jumping off every day. And I said, why is that? And he said, because I've lost three people close to me in the last year to violence, including my daughter who died in my arms. I'd like to have that grenade tossed in your lap.
Oh my God.
So the HR person who hired me was standing right there. I said, listen, you need to take this nice young man by the hand, go get the EAP, Employee Assistance Program Manual binder, find the closest mental health facility and get him there right now simply for evaluation.
Yeah.
A couple of months later, I'm talking to that HR gentleman again, and I'm terrified to ask, but finally got up my nerve. Whatever happened to that nice young man? Frank, you got evaluated, medicated, back on the job. Okay.
So you saved a life.
My goal is to save one a day.
Yeah. Oh, that is awesome. You and I talking, and a lot of the people that have been on the show, I've always wondered why we don't talk to children about the thoughts in their head. Okay, the thoughts that run through our heads from the time we exist, they're not necessarily real. They're not necessarily true. And you don't have to act on them. Mm. But because kids have never, no one's ever told you, you could think things that aren't real, or you could think you can have weird thoughts. No one says that. And I'll go one further. Rex Sykes, who's been on the show, he said to me, we're taught we have to get a license to have a cat or a dog. We have to get licenses for all kinds of things. No one has ever been taught to drive their brain.
Yes, I think mental health should be taught starting in elementary school, along with physical health.
Absolutely. And that, I think that's sort of part of the goal of what we in this space work for.
Yes.
Because making the talk, my mission is to end the silence, the stigma and the shame, but that starts with the silence, because it's not just boomers. It's not just the elder generation, like my father and his generation, all of them, even Gen Z, because they don't know any better. nobody talks about it. And you putting it out there in a comedic way is a wonderful start, but we need a million of you.
Yes.
So like when are you cloning you? That's my next question.
Yes, like Dolly the sheep?
Yeah. Okay. That's not bad.
Yes, sorry. A friend of mine had a joke about that. We're cloning sheep. Do we really need more sheep? I thought we had pretty much as many as we need.
Of all the things to clone, I don't think sheep was a good place to start. Right.
He said, how about Martha Stewart? We could use another Martha Stewart, help with homemaking. And
Absolutely. I think that would have been good. Yeah, maybe. So now when you do talks, when you get up there on stage, and I know you don't just do talks, if I'm not mistaken, you are still a stand-up comedian.
Selectively. Yes, somebody got mad at me one time and was going to try to cancel me. And he said, I'm going to make sure you never work in a comedy club again. And I said, can I get that in writing? Yeah, because it doesn't pay very much. Somebody asked me, what's the difference between a corporate comedian and a club comedian? About $5,000 a night plus travel. I'm no math major, but yeah. I do it occasionally on a ship.
Yeah.
And also, I'm speaking, doing a keynote in the morning, perhaps, and they didn't have entertainment for the banquet that night. I volunteered to do 45 minutes of good, clean corporate stand-up that evening.
Oh, that is excellent. Being able to choose that, I think, is absolutely wonderful. But you have, for one thing, you have an incredibly long and prodigious career. And some things I'm sure some people know because you do a lot of podcasts and what have you. But just one thing that I thought was really interesting, because I don't know if you told me or I don't know who told me, but you did the Johnny Carson show. You wrote for them for, what, 20 years?
Yes, actually, I wrote for Jay Leno. When he was okay. The permanent guest host. And then he kept a bunch of us on contract labor after he got the show for real.
Yeah, but you were never in the writer's room.
No, I never. That was the dream.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And I pumped in 12 or 24 jokes a day. And some guys actually made it from faxing in jokes to the table. I never quite got over the hump. But we have two co-authors and I have 4 books on men's mental health. And the 4th book is about to come out. And so I called Jay and said, would you do a blurb for me for the cover? And he did.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah.
Very nice guy.
Okay. And when is it due to come out?
It's out. It came out, in 22, April of 22.
Okay.
Yep.
We will make sure that all 4 of those books are down below in the transcript as well. Because
it's Guts, Grit, and the Grind. Guts, Grit, and the Grind. Yep.
Okay.
And I've done the first one for Audible. I'll be recording the other 3 as well.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Because that's important. I think Audible is really important these days for not just people on the go. A lot of people have Audible on when they're driving to and from work, when they're sitting in traffic. And then there's those of us who can't see who now use Audible because we can't see the books.
Yes, and. As they say in improv, there was an article in New York Times 4 or 5 years ago that said back in the day, the audio book was simply an add-on.
Yeah.
And now it's its own genre, and some big time authors are going straight to Audible. There's never a book in print. There's never an ebook. They're going straight to Audible.
Oh, absolutely. And that does make sense to me because my father actually had trouble reading. And when that started, it was really hard to find him books because they certainly weren't as prolific as they are now.
Oh, and, Lord, no.
No. And yeah, not.
There used to be a service. There was a service for the visually impaired that recorded books back in the day.
Yeah. But you had to acknowledge that you were visually impaired to get on that service. I say, yeah. I'm very much like my father.
Yeah.
Audible works really well. But I think it's important, and I think it's serving the most people by doing Audible as well for your books. I'm surprised when I've met a number of people and it's never occurred to them that they should do an Audible book.
And I just discovered from one of my coaching clients who is, he can see a little, legally blind, he can see a little bit out of one eye. He said, I didn't know this. On Kindle, there's an accessibility setting. Kindle will read the book out loud to you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got to have him walk me through finding that. But he said, yeah, there's a button in there, Frank. If you hit it, it will read to you.
Perfect. Oh, that is awesome. That is absolutely awesome. Good tip. You can get Google to do that.
Oh.
But it takes a fair amount of effort. It's not as easy as just pushing a button. That sounds wonderful. And I'm sure there are a ton of people who would love that.
Yes, who just found out about it right now.
Yes, it's okay. Quick, go to Kindle. Figure this out.
Yeah, that way you don't have to buy the book. You don't have to buy the audiobook if Kindle will read it to you.
Yeah.
Now, is it going to be as good as having a voiceover actor read it to you?
No.
Probably not, but
no.
Cheaper.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I really prefer when the author reads the book.
Yes. Stephen King began to read his books. And the first couple, it was just a sleigh ride through Hades. And then he got better at it and better at it and better. Now he's good at it.
Yeah. And for me, it's the inflections in the right place and the timing and the cadence, because it's their story. So yes.
Every now and then, because I listen to a lot of audiobooks, you can tell they're acting, they're reading, not comprehending, because he's never had a sexual encounter because he was flaccid. I think that's flaccid, I do believe.
Yes. It's funny. That's something that used to drive me crazy. My son is in the media, and as a young person, I said, there's one thing you have to do. Okay, if you don't know how to pronounce someone's name, you ask them. Okay, city they're in or what have you. I am so tired of hearing that I live in Ottawa, for starters, just the nation's capital, nothing important,
no.
In Canada, which is actually a suburb. But it's priceless when you have a slightly different name. And my mother's maiden name was Faulknan. Faughnan.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, I'll be asking, hey, listen, how do you pronounce this woman's name?
Yeah. And we're Scots-Irish. So there are a lot of Irish names that you really have to ask before you try to brutalize someone's name. I don't think that's a good thing. And you do sometimes hear that in books. One of the worst places, funny enough, is the Google Maps and whatever the other mapping stuff is.
Yeah.
All of MapQuest, all of those. I have a friend, her last name is Babulik. So her little machine says, Linda Babulik is calling. Whoa, that's just the accent's on the wrong syllable there. It's just a little grating on the ear. She says, imagine being me every time I turn that machine on.
And there's a commercial for the Eugene Airport, and they're talking about fly local, use them instead of going 2 hours to Portland. But the woman they got to do the voiceover, she goes, in the Willamette Valley.
Oh.
If you're a local, it's the Willamette Valley.
Yeah.
And I sent him a note. I go, look, you're bragging local. And the woman, nobody corrected her, because in the Northwest, there's lots of, plus Indian, Native American names.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Enumclaw. Here too. Snohomish. Yeah, so it's, yeah. It's, my mom was an English teacher. Her mother was an English teacher. So I can't not hear things. It just, and the things that slip past the editors in the commercials just.
Oh, yeah.
Here's my personal favorite. Millennials have, and Gen Z has a problem with the letter T.
Yes.
And other consonants. Mm-hmm. Clinton. Kitten.
Thank you.
Important. Thank you. You know what's important? Is the other three important?
Yeah. I kept asking that. Like, where Manhattan? Mm. Where did the T go?
Yes.
It's like, I was sure the last time I was there, there were T's in there. I'm positive. But yeah.
And I've heard newscasters do it, and I've heard people do it in commercials, and the editors should know better. I'm old. I'm now the guy screaming at the kids on my lawn. It's look what you're doing to my language. I think that one particular party has been trying to dumb down the American public for decades, cutting teacher salaries, this sort of thing. And I think they've achieved it because I listen to a lot of podcasts, 48 Hours, 2020. I love police murder mysteries. And he hadn't ran to the store. Something about the helping verb had.
Is it about that?
Go ahead.
We have a additional issue, if you will, because Ottawa sits at the confluence of two rivers, and on the other side is Quebec. Many of our street names and places are French.
Oh.
Close to where I live, there's a street called Place d'Orléans. Imagine how that comes out. Place d'Orléans. Where are we? And it's almost every second street, there's either it's French, so whoever's reading it, and you can tell whoever does the local commercials, they are not from here.
Not from here. Not from around here, no.
And yeah, this is on TV.
I know.
How can you do that? If I was not to put it out there for people, but I would not pay for that advertisement. If you are butchering my name and my address and all of that, it just seems ludicrous.
And I took five years of voiceover training in LA. And if it's a proper noun, I want to know the name of something, how do you pronounce this, or a street name, or whatever. When I introduce people, if I'm emceeing for an event, I go through my highlighter and I go, you're going to have to tell me how to say this name because I'm going to butcher it. It's just laziness, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we got into millennials and then Gen Z, it seems that more than two syllables is too much effort. Things become, what is it, adorbs?
Right. Yeah. My wife used to work with a lot of young people. It's a shortened shortened version of the word. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The fam.
Oh, yeah. When I want to annoy my millennial son, that's what I text him. How's the fam? Mom, stop it.
And one of my wife's young friends at work, she's now retired, but at work said, you use punctuation in your text. That's rude.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. I put a period. I've been using period and capitalizing the first letter of the sentence. I guess that's not.
Well, how do you know when the sentence ends if you don't put a period?
The old joke about how important the comma is. Bob helped Jack off his horse.
Yes, to your point, absolutely.
Yeah.
My family weren't English teachers, but my favorite teacher was my English teacher in grade 7 and 8. And every morning, our homework was always 20 compound sentences.
Oh.
That we had to parse.
Oh, God.
Every single day.
You're talking about diagramming the sentences?
Yeah, I'm talking about,
Oh, that was my least favorite thing. I could never quite get the
predicate.
Yeah, dangling modifiers and
It's oh my God. And she would she taught us all to write cursively.
Oh, that's crazy. Running writing?
Yeah. And she would go around and check your arm up to your elbow. Because if there wasn't dirt on your arm, you were not writing correctly. God bless her. She was a lovely older lady. But she did that and made us all take Latin. She said, take Latin at least until grade 10, and you will never be stuck to understand your language. And it's true. It's true.
Yes,
we don't teach it anymore.
What you and I had the benefit of was, I think, was when you and I were in school, public school. The job opportunities, professional job opportunities for women weren't like they are today.
No.
You most of the women I knew who worked professionally were a nurse or a teacher. So we got the cream of the crop of teachers.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's a fallback occupation. But then they took great pride in their professionalism.
Oh yeah.
And so I think we benefited from a good friend of mine goes, yeah, I went to public school. I got a good education. Could have been gooder.
I went to parochial school. My parents demanded that I go to the Catholic school, and they gave up so much for this Catholic school because in Canada, you had to pay for high school if you went to a Catholic school.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, save your money. I want to go where everyone else is going. I don't want to go there. And by grade 11, I decided, we won't go into all the garbage why, but I hitchhiked to the other side of the country.
Oh, dear God.
More than 3,500 miles away.
Wow.
I was very smart. I took my girlfriend's two brothers with me so I'd be safe.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I thought I was being very smart. I was gone for a couple of months. When I came back, my father said, fine, you can go to a public school if you just go back to school. It's perfect.
Yeah.
By day three, oh my God, I wanted to die and wanted to get back to Notre Dame so fast. Because in public school, they didn't wear a uniform.
Yep.
We were poor. I had to go get another job so I would have clothes to wear to school. So I didn't get to spend all the time I wanted with my friends. I was too busy working so that I could wear clothes to not see my friends.
Yeah.
But it was a lesson learned.
Yes, and good Catholic education never hurt anybody. Well, yeah. Depending on the nun, but
yeah.
Many a comic has made a career. Yeah, so my teacher was Sister Mary Harley Davidson.
Yes, I had lots of nuns, and there were also brothers, because the girls' school was attached, you're going to love this, by tunnels to the boys' school. It was quite the place. But we had Brother Rich, who was the... I still don't know what he did. He just seemed to haunt the tunnels a lot. And all of our teachers, all of the nuns were, if you lined them up, they went to about 6'4".
Whoa.
Down to 4'9". And they were sometimes inversely nasty.
Ah.
So the little ones were much meaner than the big ones. But yeah, it was a very interesting education in parochial school. I will say that the girls' school had the most drug dealers and the most kids that skipped and the most that got caught too.
Hi.
Hello there.
One of our eight rescue kitties.
Wow, you have eight.
When you start adopting cats, people find out, there's a cat living in my driveway. Come bring your live trap. Okay, fine.
We just have, I'm going to say it quietly because I don't want them to react, but chihuahuas.
Ah.
A pair of chihuahuas. Yeah. who think they are 90-pound Rottweilers.
Of course they do.
Yeah, one is a giant 4-pounder and the other one is 6.5 pounds.
Woo.
Yeah. I think it's important for people, for children actually, to have a pet.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's a way to learn empathy and kindness.
Mm-hmm. And responsibility.
And I was going to say, and responsibility and caring for something or someone else, which I think is incredibly important. And often people say that, but as soon as they get the pet, the parents end up looking after the pets, not the children. And it's, I suppose it's the usual way, but I still think it's important for kids to have that responsibility, I guess, is the whole thing, because it does give you a little bit more maturity when you have to be responsible for something else.
Yep, I agree. Yeah.
And also, I think it gives kids that have issues, that have suicidal ideation, and that a little pause. Because if you have to look after someone or something else, it's not quite as easy to go that next step and plan.
Yes, the protocol is, if someone is suicidal, they let you know that, or you suspect it, you ask them if they have a plan.
Yeah.
If they have a plan, what is your plan? If it's detailed, time, place, and method, then you should do your best to get them to a mental health facility as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
However, there's nothing in the literature about this. I made this up. What if they got a plan, but it's not really detailed? What would you do then? I would say, okay, all right. Are you going to kill yourself? And if they said no, I would say, okay, tell me why not. Because
good.
Something's keeping them here. Pets, parents, religion, something. Yeah. And then trying to leverage that to keep them alive for another day. Yes.
That's okay. Now I know why I went there. Thank you. That's important. That is really important. And that's the other thing. We never have all the answers. It's just not possible. We just can't. But that's something that I think should be shared with 988 and the Trevor Project and the Samaritans and Frank, seriously, because it's that extra step.
Yes.
May save someone else.
Someday, I'm going to do a TEDx. Simon Sinek did a TEDx, Start With Why.
Yeah.
My TEDx is going to be Start With Why Not.
Oh, I love that.
Thank
and
you.
That would be, now, I think I'm right here, but you've done 12 now?
Yes, I have number 13 scheduled for November.
Wow.
A world record, not official, but I can't find anybody else with that many.
Yeah, that's a lot. I thought it was a lot back when you had 8. So it's really a lot now.
Yes. And it somebody calls up or whatever, discovery call, what qualifies you to teach TEDx? I have a dozen, like 12?
Yeah.
That dozen. Yeah, that one.
That is so amazing, because there are an awful lot of TEDx trainers. Some don't even have one.
Correct. And my unique selling proposition is, we work on getting you a TEDx until you get one, or we both die trying. So there's no tail end on it.
That's pretty ironclad.
Yeah. Now I have two of my clients at some point said, listen, I get that. I understand that, but I want an extra clause in there. I go, what clause do you want in there? That you won't kill yourself before I get one. Okay. Yes.
Yes.
But part of what I do, I believe, is to make them feel comfortable saying something like that out loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in just general conversation.
Absolutely. And somewhat like gallows humor. You're at a gravesite or you're at a funeral and some people will burst into laughter. We want to make that okay.
Yes.
Shortly after you were on the first time, I lost my sister.
Oh.
At the end of October in 2021. And she was 5 years younger than me. We were still in a lot of COVID protocol, and, mm-hmm. and we're quite a small family. She has one son, I have two kids and five grandkids, and she has two grandkids. And we could only have the small family at the plot. And we had the kids brought little things they wanted to give their gran.
Huh.
And my son brought a note, and we all put that in. And I brought a toy fire truck because my sister, nobody knows why this started or what happened, but my sister and I were 5 years apart, and we're like chalk and cheese. Okay. We are night and day. We fought all the time. It was just one of those things. But I always knew, and she always knew, I can say what I want about her and vice versa, but don't you say anything about her.
Yeah.
My sister would have ended you. And we would fight, and it was always like Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, whatever, at the dinner table, there was always some big blow up. Right. And then at some point, I turned around someday and said, fire truck. Don't remember why. And my sister had the weirdest, wildest giggle you could hear for miles. Okay. We went to the Blue Man Group and they stopped what they were doing on stage because they heard her. Like she wow. just was so loud. But it was joyous. It came right from the middle of her. And so we had to do that. And the man from the cemetery who was putting everything back together when we were leaving, he said, I just want you to know, this is honestly the most joyous little celebration we have ever seen. And we all went for meal after. And the only thing my sister asked for was don't play stupid funeral music at my funeral. Right there, we were playing all kinds of U2 and Monster Mash and all sorts of weird stuff. But it's laughter and fun and little things like that to me are so incredibly important.
Oh, yeah.
That's laughter can, wherever it happens, is a good thing.
And mine's a little dark, granted, but
yeah, yeah, definitely.
I'll leave you this because I got another one top of the hour. Meeting planner for NAMI Oregon, National Alliance of Mental Illness.
Yep.
Doing a keynote for them.
Oh, good.
She called, well, this is previously. She called up and said, you're doing the keynote. I said, yes, I am. I said, what would you like me to cover? And she knew full well that at one point I had a gun in my mouth.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, Frank, just give me a couple of bullet points.
Oof.
So I just let that hang in the air. And all of a sudden she's going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I go, Michelle, relax. It was just too good to let go by.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Just think how much mileage you can get out of that.
Oh, yeah. It's just it happens quite. The guy called me up. He called late, like half an hour. He goes, hope I didn't leave you hanging. I said, do you want to rephrase that? It just, you know, it's just, and that's where the humor is, in a turn of a phrase or something like, my grandmother killed herself with a gas stove, my great aunt with a refrigerator. What is it with my relatives and major appliances? I drive past Home Depot, I tear up. I know.
But see, we're leaving on a happy note, which is absolutely wonderful. I hope someday you in the audience get to spend a little time with Frank. It's well worth it. Your sides are going to hurt, but that's definitely a good thing.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming back. It's wonderful to have you again as a guest. We'll make sure that you can get to Frank and all his books and everything else, including the TED Talks, all more than a dozen, because by November, that will be lucky number 13.
Yep.
I think it's very cool. I can't say enough. It is wonderful. It was really wonderful to meet you in person. And I look forward to the next time we do that.
And If you will, I will close the podcast out as a comedian would. You ready?
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your friends. If you did not enjoy the podcast, we hope you have no friends.
but a bump bump yeah, again. Absolutely. This is it for us today. I'm Elaine Lindsay. It's Suicide Zen Forgiveness. Once again, I want you to make the very best of your today, every day, and we're going to see you next time. Bye now.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Truel Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist Judy Kroon, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach Program in Toronto. Lisa Sugarman, Boston-based author, columnist, and crisis counselor with the Trevor Project, America's largest suicide and crisis support network for at-risk LGBTQ+ youth, storyteller with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, survivor of suicide loss, and mental health advocate. Lisa's purpose aligns with Elaine's as Lisa shares content and sparks conversations to help end the stigma of suicide and connect people with the support and hope they deserve. Do you have a story to share? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest? Please go to SZF42.com. And for our American listeners, that's SZF42.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again.